These are unnatural times. It's the only conclusion to draw. It's grand final week and we're removed from it. There's been an earthquake. The city's under siege. We rely on experience at times like this. Mike Sheehan, welcome.
Hello, Jared. Am I the earthquake specialist, am I?
What is happening in our city?
I don't know. It is a weird week, isn't it? Last week, the grand final wasn't played here, but it was more normal. But I was just coming in on the tram this morning. Not much colour. Everyone preoccupied with the earthquake, as they're entitled to be. But the game just now seems so far away. I don't mean in time. I'm talking about geographically.
Yep. Did you feel the earthquake?
Yeah, I did. I shouldn't tell you. I was in the shower, actually. And I thought the kids have been coming in and out. And I thought someone was in the kitchen had dropped something big. So I called out, no answer. And I didn't know anything until I got some text messages.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Terry Wallace texted me last week. He said, you should go back. Go back to the time of Norm Smith's sacking. And then if you believe in the sporting gods, and I do, well, there have to be curses and there have to be hexes and there have to be jinxes. And it's not quite as – so in the US, this is the driver of all things.
Yep.
The curse of the Bambino is a beautiful part of their sporting narrative, and it ends in glorious style when finally they rise above in 2004 and movies are made and documentaries are made. It's not quite that here, although I suspect for decades it probably was.
We've got our own version, the Collywobbles.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, there's no question, and I'm a big believer in karma. I don't know why. There's no scientific basis for this, but just things happen for some obscure reason.
Yep.
I believe in the karma bus, and I think now the bus driver has decided to turn left and head for Melbourne, hopefully.
So we go back in time to 1965 and Tony Charlton's football show. There's a 6.5 minute clip on YouTube. And once we're done through our half hour here, I couldn't recommend it to you enough. It is the most magnificent time capsule of Australiana, of football, and of what was declared the most explosive story in football history. Must still have a claim to it now.
Yeah, no, I saw that interview. You know, sometimes, and particularly this time, I'm wrestling with, did I actually see it or did I read it so often that it just became ingrained? But I do remember seeing it was like a state funeral. And Tony Charlton was perfectly equipped to handle the interview. He was a friend of Norm Smith's and he just captured the moment and it was gripping television. You know, those footy shows of the time were very loose. I mean, the people spoke over each other and the crosses were all sloppy and all that sort of stuff. But this one, everyone just held their breath for 6 or 7 minutes.
Here's an encapsulation of what was taking place that Sunday lunchtime.
Tony Charlton's football show.
On Friday night at 8 o'clock, Norman Smith received a letter sent by special delivery. The letter produced the bombshell that his appointment as coach of the strongest football club in the history of the game was cancelled as from that date.
Well, it starts back, I'd say a year or two ago. I think when the committee failed to support me or give me the support that I wanted in this writ action, it was unacceptable to me that I could work with men who wouldn't back me, men who would expect me to get the utmost from the players and demand from the players the loyalty and support, and at the other end of the line were not prepared to give me their support. That's where it started. I spoke to Len and I said, I think I'll offer my resignation. And Len said to me, don't be a fool, you owe it to the boys to keep coaching. And I felt that this was so. So he said, eat humble pie. Ever eaten humble pie? It's got an awful taste, but I ate humble pie and I tricked the committee. They expected me to blow up and they had the opportunity. Well, instead of that happening there and then, they waited for something else to happen. And it didn't happen. So then they created two lies. They created two lies and put it in writing and sent it out by special messenger just to get rid of me. No, I think there was two images at Melbourne that certain people wanted to destroy. In one sense, it was Ronnie, and then I think the other sense, it's me. I'm Melbourne at this stage, Tony, I'm Melbourne. I'm Melbourne, and I am Melbourne, and I'm Melbourne through and through.
Oh, the gravity of it.
I know. It takes me back all those years to listening to him. And it was a sort of a master-servant relationship then, Jared. The MCC was the uppity crew. I mean, they were born to rule. And I think that they just, when Smith challenged them, as he could, because he had an acid tongue.
Yep.
And he was very independent. I think then someone or a group of them sort of said, we need to put this bloke back in his box.
So Ray Groom lived this. In 1965, he was wearing the number 31
Correct.
Of Ron Barassi, which was seismic in its own right. He went on to serve as the Premier of Tasmania. Ray, it's great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
G'day, Jared. G'day, Mike.
Hi, Ray.
Pleased to be here.
How vivid are those days for you?
Gosh, it makes me feel quite emotional hearing Norm's comments. When you listen to him, you can tell that he was a very good speaker. It was a dramatic time, just a terrible time for a young player. I was just turned 20 at 1920, or just 20, yeah. And, you know, I couldn't quite understand what was going on. It shattered the club. It was sort of in pieces, really, from that point on for probably 50 years. But I think we're now recovering. I'd like to talk about the curse being over.
We all would, Ray.
Genuinely believe it is.
Let's stay with that period, though, for a moment. We knew that the letter was hand-delivered to Norm from the Melbourne Cricket Club. That was a Friday night, wasn't it?
That was Friday night.
Yeah,
that was a very weak thing to do for a board.
Agree.
To just convey the message by way of letter and a courier.
Were you playing the next day?
Yes. We played North Melbourne at the old
Coburg
Oval, because that was a temporary oval. So I played that day. Checker Hughes was the coach. I can recall Checker in his gabardine coat and a hat on.
Yeah.
And I think he had a walking stick at the time. I think he was 77.
He was, yes.
Thereabouts. And, you know, everyone was flat. The boys were all flat.
So when did you hear about it, Ray? Were you playing at Coburg at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. When did you learn?
I had a call from Hassaman at home. I was in a flat with my mother and younger sister. I had a call from Hassa that night, just sort of briefly explaining. He was in a state of shock. I was too. Then the next morning, I got a telegram. You know, we used to have telegrams in those days. A telegram advising me to attend a players' meeting at the ground. I think it was 10:30 the next morning, the Saturday morning, before the game against North.
And the telegram said?
And the telegram said there's a players' meeting on. It was all in the news, so we knew what was going on by the next morning. That we shouldn't speak to the media, but we should come straight to the ground to discuss what had happened. And from memory, Dr. Don Duffy, who was the chairman, spoke to us, and also Jim Cardwell, then the secretary of the club, gave us a bit of a talk. But we're all very flat, I can tell you now. Very puzzled about what was going on and quite shocked, actually.
Do you believe in curses, Ray? We talk about it loosely. Do you?
Well, I didn't believe them until this one happened. I think there has been a curse, to be quite frank. I think it lasted 50 years until Peter Jackson became CEO, and sort of we've built up since then. There's been a sort of strong foundation. The club has stabilised. But it lasted 50 years. I mean, the club was shattered into little pieces, and there was division in the club. Some weren't talking to others, and so on. You can't have a club divided, can you?
You can't.
Anything.
The only thing.
Together.
I'm with you a bit on the curse and the karma, but is it a cop out? Does it cover the inadequacies of the subsequent administrations at the footy club?
Well, there were certainly inadequacies, but there was a feeling there that remained in the club. It was sort of hanging around, sort of like haunting us, really. And I've sort of suffered every year since, sort of hoping we were going to do well, and we didn't achieve what we wanted to achieve. But I have to say, you know, I mentioned Jackson being appointed, and the Paul Roos decision to get him in, and then there's been a smooth transition to Gary Perth and to Goodwin as coach. And then he would prove to be an outstanding coach. But I think the turning point, and I make this point, I reckon the Norm Smith curse is dead, and it's dead from the point when Max Gawn kicked that goal in the final match of the home and away season against Geelong, which put us at the top of the ladder, first time since 64. The boys ran into Max and jumped all around him. They didn't realise at the time, but that's when the curse died. I reckon the curse is dead.
We hope.
It's gone. It's gone forever.
That's beautiful, Ray. You're giving me goosebumps just saying it. Are you about to travel over to the West? Are you going to see it firsthand?
Well, I feel very fortunate being in Tasmania and Hobart here, and we fly off later on today to Perth, direct flight from Hobart to Perth. And, you know, I feel very privileged to be able, because all the mates, my teammates are locked away in Melbourne and can't go across to Perth unless they go into quarantine for 14 days, which is very hard. And, of course, we've lost quite a few of our teammates over the years. But, I'm just sort of so lucky to fly with Jill, the wife, to cross to Perth and to watch the Demons.
Ray, I've always wanted to ask you this question. I haven't crossed paths with you very often. What was the proverbial weight of number 31 when you were so young and immediately after Ron's departure to Carlton?
Well, it was massive. Look, I had number 15. I was quite happy with number 15. And we're in the rooms one day and Norm said, come over here, Ray, and I want to talk to you. And he said, I want you to wear number 31. Well, I have to say I had some doubts as to whether I really should. But because Norm asked me to, and I was very, you know, had a good relationship with Norm, and I respected him. We're speaking about Norm Smith. He was a great person. He was a great Australian. I really respected Norm. He was a tough fellow. But when he said, look, Ray, you wear number 31, I thought, hell's bells. I better do it, do the right thing by Norm. But it wasn't easy. It was a burden, I tell you. And I had a bad injury that was a hamstring that was really bad, when you could sort of feel the gap in the hamstring as you put your hand behind your thigh. There it was. These days, I think they'd probably operate. So I sort of, I carried 31 and had that injury, and it affected me for the next year or two before I finally recovered from it. But I was very pleased, of course. I had lots of time for Ron. I mean, he was fantastic. He was such a dynamic player, a wonderful captain. And he was part of our success. Norm and Ron, the duo, were a big part of our success in the 50s and 60s.
Ray, thank you for sharing your reminiscence with us today. And travel well. Enjoy this time in Perth. And I think a lot of us hope you're right. That the curse is dead.
Good luck, Ray.
Good on you.
Bye.
Ray Groom. So Hassaman's about to join us. He was the captain. So he had to rally the troops, work out whether they were going to play. And then he was there on that Sunday as well, as was Ron Barassi. So we'll take you to more of the aftermath of Norm Smith's sacking in a moment. The sacking that shook the football world in 1965 and cast the curse of Norm Smith. So more from the Tony Charlton Football Show, where Ron Barassi, who had moved to Carlton, came into the studio, and Hassaman, who was the Demons captain.
I would say one thing, everyone knows it's a tragedy what has happened, but the thing that I feel is grossly unjust is the allegations that the club have made on Norm Smith's character, which I feel is wrong, and I can't understand any committee coming to this decision and allegation after knowing the man the way they have. He's been at Melbourne almost 30 years and he's been straight and honest all those 30 years, and even if it were true, and it's not, of course, but even if it were, I mean, the fact that they didn't give him a chance or any way at all, it's beyond me, and it's a pity such a great club has seen fit to do such a thing.
Do you think the wound can be healed?
No.
It made for fiery Sunday lunchtime TV. The previous day, Melbourne had lost to North Melbourne at the Coburg Ground, the Demons under the ageing Checker Hughes. That night, the team had visited Smith's home. Later, they would attend a dance at the club. The position of the players was never in doubt. On the Sunday morning, skipper Hassaman, vice-captain Brian Keneally and rover Johnny Townsend were in the studios.
I rang all players yesterday morning and I was in touch with all players before 9:30 yesterday morning, and not one player mentioned to me that they would not play on Saturday afternoon.
The voice of Hassaman then, and Mike Hasser is with us now. Hassaman, great to have you back on SEN.
Good morning, Gerard.
How vividly do you recall that Sunday and that Tony Charlton football show, given the events that had transpired?
Recall it quite vividly, Gerard, because it was an issue that I think rocked the football world, and certainly rocked us as players, because, as you were aware, I was actually talking to Norm on the Friday night when the messenger arrived, a telegram arrived, and it was, you know, we were talking about the game the following day, and then I heard the doorbell ring, and we finished a conversation. Norm came back a couple of minutes later and told us that he'd been sacked, and it was just unbelievable, just unbelievable.
Hasse, good morning to you. What do you think precipitated the Melbourne Cricket Club decision to dismiss the coach who'd won 6 premierships in 10 years? Was it, Norm believes it was the lack of support over the Don Blue defamation case, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think, Mike, there was a obviously a build-up of tensions since that the incident with Don Blue. And I also think it was a case that Norm had been, I think, thumping the table with the committee for some time. Norm was concerned about, I guess, we were coming to the end of an era in terms of, you know, the Barassi, the Dixons, all those that played with Melbourne and started with Melbourne back in the 1952-53. And Norm could see that Melbourne Football Club had to change its attitude with regards to recruiting players. Other clubs had started to buy in players from interstate, and Melbourne Football Club at that stage were not into contracts and didn't believe in contracts, and Norm could see that they had to change, and this tension was building up. Norm was thumping the table. The committee was sort of refusing to listen. I think a number of committee people felt that Norm had a bit of a big head, that he was sort of the coach, a successful coach, and I think there was just a build-up of all of those things that caused this tension. Look, I don't know. I tried to find out through Ian Ridley. The only person who knew the real reasons for the sackings was Ian Ridley, who was secretary to the committee when the decision was made. And for credit for Ian, Ian never, ever released what the main reasons were.
Hasse, there's a school of thought that the committee was angry with Norm because Norm didn't try to convince Ron to stay at Melbourne rather than go to Carlton and take the coaching job.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, that was incorrect, because I believe Norm offered to stand aside for Ron.
You can't do much more than that, can you?
No. It was my firm understanding that Norm offered to do that. But Ron, of course, being strong-headed, Ron realised, and probably correctly so, that if he was going to pursue a coaching career, he should at least start doing it away from the club that he'd played for.
Hasse, I want to ask you about what a terrible waste of talent that we experienced when Norm died at the age of 57. Now, 57 today is barely middle-aged, and he was dead at 57. A huge loss to football, wasn't it?
It certainly was, and I guess we'll never know, Mike, but the tension of that period, the sacking and so forth, you know, undoubtedly had some bearing on, you know, Norm's health. And, you know, he suffered a couple of heart attacks. And when it eventually happened, it was a great shock to the football community.
The industry says that Len Smith was the master tactician. That's Norm's brother, Len. And that Norm was sort of more of a rabble-rouser. Is that fair to Norm? I read the Red Fox, and I thought Norm's handle on strategy was brilliant.
Yeah, I couldn't argue with that, Mike. You know my feeling towards Norm Smith. I think whatever I achieved in football, I owe directly to Norm Smith. And saying that, I think that most of the players who played under Norm would have vouched for that also. Norm was probably before his time. I mean, he tried things. I mean, he was a very demanding coach, as you know. But players would run through brick walls for Norm Smith, and that's why, you know, he was the success behind the success for Melbourne.
Hasse, it's great to talk to you. How will you take Saturday in?
Probably nervously.
Yes.
undoubtedly, it was interesting that last Friday night when they played their last game, I was pretty okay until about 6:30, and then I, you know, was thinking about the young players and what was in front of them, and well, even now, so, you know, many of them, all of them except one, are playing in the final series, probably for the first time, particularly in the grand final. And my only concern, really, at this point in time, is that having lived in a hub for so long, having eat, sleep and talk football for the last fortnight or 3 weeks, is a drain, or can be a drain. And I only hope that the players don't play their game before they hit the ground on Saturday.
Can you confirm one thing? Sorry, Hesse, you go.
I was just saying that their form, if they can reproduce what they did against Geelong, then they're going to be very, very hard to beat.
Are you prepared to share my view that this is the most accomplished Melbourne team in the past 50 years?
Oh, undoubtedly, Mike. I think their performance against Geelong was perhaps the best Melbourne performance that I'd seen. Wow. Undoubtedly, we would have played some pretty good football, I guess, in the in that golden era. But the way in which they played the whole game against Geelong was first class. And as I say, I think it's the best Melbourne performance that I've ever seen.
Hasse, it's great to have your time this morning. Thanks a lot for taking our call.
Okay, Jared, no problems.
Thanks, Hasse.
Go D's.
Yes, indeed, go D. So Hasse was the captain. Now, Greg Hobbs was a great mentor of yours,
he was,
Mike.
Yes.
So he documented that for 50 years as one of the great footy writers, one of the great sports writers in Melbourne. Greg, great to have your contribution to the curse of Norm Smith.
Thank you.
Did you believe
Thank
in
you.
It, Greg? Did you believe that Melbourne's misfortunes could be traced back to that sacking?
Well, history says it does, but... look, I don't know. I remember the sacking so well. I remember the Tony Charlton show on the Sunday with Marge Smith crying on Norm's shoulder on the show. It was unbelievable. It was the greatest, you know, television you've ever seen in football. I don't know about that. Norm was a great man, and I loved Norm, even though I was petrified of him when I was a young boy, you know, a young reporter. But we became good mates in the end, and he was fantastic. I think one of the reasons why they kicked him out was he wouldn't sort of kowtow to the high and mighty of the Melbourne Cricket Club. You know, the officials
that.
There. He was rough as guts as far as they were concerned, and they just didn't mix.
Good morning, Gregory. He's
thank you.
He was from Northcote, Norm, wasn't he? Was he a welder? He was a tradie of sorts, wasn't he?
He worked in Miller's Ropes, I think.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, Miller's Ropes.
Now, what made him? You knew him quite well, and it's interesting for me to hear from you that you were scared of someone, but what made Norm Smith the institution that he was?
He was just so hard, and he was fair. But, look, I really don't know. All I know, he was a great player. He was a great full forward for Melbourne, but people have forgotten about it. They just think he's a coach. No, he was a great player. But he was just so straight, hard and focused. Whether he was the best coach of all time, I think he was. He was in the AFL team of the century. It's just unbelievable to think of a team like Melbourne, who virtually hijacked all the 1950s with their premierships to the extent where people were just barracking against Melbourne because they were winning so much.
Yeah.
It became an anti-Melbourne, whether you liked them, you know, whoever you barrack for.
Hobbsy, in 1965, they were 9-3. They're the reigning premier, and they have 9 wins and 3 losses from 12 games, and he's sacked. And he's reinstated X days, 3 or 4 days later. Was that that was the committee had to eat humble pie, didn't it?
They did. I remember when he was sacked, I think I was at the West Melbourne Stadium with Fight Night. I think Jack Dunn of the Sun.
Friday
Jack
night?
Dunn of the Sun cracked the story. And I was on the age. God, I can't remember what happened. I think we pinched it out of the first edition, but I just can't remember. But I know Jack got the story at the stadium.
Don't say that. Say, Jack's gone. Say you broke it.
I told Jack.
but it was it, what was and I wasn't. I didn't live this. But how could they have turned their back on this momentous decision to sack Norm Smith? And I think it was only 4 days later, wasn't it, that he was reinstated?
Yeah. It's a bit vague, all that. It was unbelievable. I know that they went out and played at Coburg or somewhere the day he was sacked.
Yep.
But by the following Saturday, he's back in harness.
Now, Hobbsy, you are...
I just can't remember what happened. Dr. Duffy was president.
That's right.
Memory.
You are one of the great pragmatists of our industry. Do you believe in curses?
Oh, not really.
I knew you wouldn't.
Things happen.
And a lot of things happen.
Look, I believe in karma. I do think that, you know, the curse is a convenient excuse for incompetent administration for a long time. But you live this. Now, if you can take your mind back to the early 60s, that this club that had won 6 out of 10 premierships wouldn't win for at least another 57 years. Inconceivable, wasn't it?
Whoever thought that when Crompton, who was a back pocket player, Neil Crompton, kicked that goal for Melbourne, that would be the last premiership they'd have until maybe Saturday.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, really. And he shouldn't have been where he was, Crompton, either, because he was looking for his rover, the bloke he was on.
Mickey
he was
Bone.
Wandering around down half forward somewhere, and I think Norm Smith gave him a pay after the game for being out of position.
That's excellent. Greg, great... Great to have your input, Greg. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Hobbsy.
Okay, mate.
So the memories of Ray Groom, Hasselman, Greg Hobbs and Mike Sheehan. So, Mike, with all of that as the backdrop, the curse of Norm Smith, whether you are or you aren't, what would it lay to rest if this happens on Saturday night in Melbourne in the 57-year drought?
I don't know what it lays to. I do know that it would be one of the great romantic stories of this tough industry that's AFL football. The best day of my reporting life, Jared, was the day the Bulldogs won in 2016. Yep. And I was sitting in the back row in the AFL section. Gillen went past. He said, "How good was that?" I said, "It's the most exciting day of my sporting career." Yep. So I love those stories. I mean, I barrack for the story. And Melbourne will be similar to what the Doggies were. First time since 54 for the Doggies. First time since 64 for Melbourne.
Yes, yes. I feel exactly the same way. As the 2016 final series is the best one I've had the privilege to call. And the zenith for me was preliminary final night. I felt like it was a certainty that the Dogs would win grand final day because I believe in the fates.
Yeah.
So I thought it was going to happen. I spent the morning with Bob Murphy at his home before he headed into the ground. And he convinced me. It was just...
So fated, yeah.
It fated, yeah. Yeah. And maybe after so much pain, maybe it's fated again. And we have seen droughts end. We've seen the Swans and Geelong and Richmond and the Bulldogs end. And there is a craving that Melbourne ends as well.
My desire would be clearly Melbourne to win this week, St Kilda to win next year, and then I'm okay. I don't care what happens after
everyone
that.
Everyone else can please themselves.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure, Jared.
It's great to tap your experience for these things.
Thank you. The curse
of Norm Smith. And a big thanks to Terry Wallace, who triggered my memory to do that, and Tony Charlton's work. I got to know Tony after he'd retired, and it was interesting that I didn't live any of his work and yet ended up knowing it so well. And it was and it's a moment that is the core of his work that has him in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, true. And he was that was his highlight, clearly. But he was a very company and a great man. I loved time with Tony.
Good stuff.